This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
All right, everybody, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. Thank you for stopping in. It is 1:01 on a Thursday afternoon. It is October 8th. It is the middle of what is the craziest sports month of the year. In the non-COVID category, because this year was certainly a strange September. And as I speak to you, as we come on the radio, the very moment we come on the radio, Ramon Laureano, the center fielder for the Oakland Athletics, hits a three-run bomb in Game 4 of the American League Division Series, breaks the even tie off Zach Greinke, gives Oakland the lead. Oh, my gosh, we are just jumping right into this one today. Oh, my goodness, what a day. Four elimination games in baseball today. The Marlins are about to be eliminated. They trail 5-0 right now in the fifth inning. We obviously have this A's and Astros game we will be monitoring. The Yankees are fighting for their lives today against the Tampa Bay Rays. That game is going to be epic, and of course, my San Diego Padres, doing my best Uncle Ted Leitner impression. They play for their lives today against the Dodgers after a game that was just on crack on Wednesday night. So here we are on Thursday. Thank you to everyone stopping in on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Thank you to everyone stopping in on the weekend over on the Take It Easy radio show, or I'm sorry, the Take It Easy podcast network. Thank you to everyone on the radio feed as well. A lot of fun stuff I want to talk about today. We'll see how much we get to. I got Lamar Jackson. I got Dwayne Haskins. I got Shamatrism and a recap of how that's going. Bills Titans, Bill O'Brien, all kinds of stuff. I'm obviously not going to be able to get to all of it, but we'll see how much we get to, and we may butt in here and there with some playoff baseball because if you're interested more on the baseball talk, be on the lookout for Sunday's episode of Wired Up on the podcast and, of course, today's episode where we talked about Astro Ball and the Tampa Bay Rays over on the podcast feed. You can look up Take It Easy, Kyle, wherever you get podcasts. First place I want to go today, and I guess it's like our main topic as it's kind of become now, but I want to go to the NBA because tomorrow night, or if you're listening on Saturday, the Lakers are about to be crowned champions of the NBA. It is only a formality at this point. I wish that we could do this on Saturday morning when you'll hear it on the podcast feed. If you were listening on Saturday morning, we would have already had the Lakers crowned as champions, or they wouldn't have been crowned as champions, and I'll come back next week and it'll be a game seven on Thursday, I believe, in which case, oops. But regardless, the Lakers are going to be crowned champions tomorrow. And I probably, after this radio show and tomorrow's podcast, probably won't be talking about basketball for a good while now, probably a few good months in here without talking about basketball. And so we're in this position now where we're watching the NBA playoffs unfold, and we're about to watch the Lakers be crowned champions. But I said back in, I believe it was September 16th, we had it date marked. So on this radio show, that would be going back to the 17th. September 17th, that was probably our fifth episode of the radio show. I told you that the Lakers are going to be NBA champions, that it is a formality. The Lakers are about to be the 2020 NBA champions. And how did we know that postmarked September 17th? September 17th? Because on September 15th, the Lakers were the benefactors of the Denver Nuggets defeating the Los Angeles Clippers in a historic 3-1 comeback that no one really saw coming, but by the time Game 7 rolled around, it felt a little bit like a formality. And I kept saying, you know, are the Nuggets going to do this thing? And they did do this thing. And this was coming off the heels of Giannis getting hurt to the Bucks and them being the other superpower in the sport. And as a result of that, the Lakers had a coasting path to the championship. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The Lakers coasted to the championship. And this is okay. We've been talking about this for a while, is that LeBron James is going to get an easy NBA Finals. And tomorrow on the radio or on the podcast, we're going to be talking about how we'll look back on this bubble season 10 years from now. And largely, history is going to forget about this season. Not because it was in a bubble. I know the only thing that people will remember from this is the occasional highlight drop. From this year, you're going to see the occasional highlight drop of a neutral court, which is going to be strange. But once we enter a post-COVID world, or at the very least where COVID doesn't dictate every move of our lives, as it has been for the past 7 months, once we enter that post-COVID world, this NBA season will be largely forgotten. And it has nothing to do with the COVID or the neutral site or the bubble. It just has to do with the fact that we didn't get any super teams. And the level of basketball, when compared year over year and decade over decade, was just not very strong. We got to the second round of the playoffs and got a little bit bored of the second round of the playoffs. And then ultimately we kept watching as we got second round matchups over and over and over again, all the way up until the culmination of this NBA Finals, where the Heat and the Lakers are getting glorified second round ratings because it is a glorified second round matchup. Let's not get it twisted that this is it's the same thing that happened. I think they're at the same ratings as Spurs and Nets from 2003. And that just comes down to who's playing in the finals. Since the Miami Heat are not a competitive basketball team, the same way the Toronto Raptors were better, but not as competitive last year, they were the benefactors of Kevin Durant injuries that blew that one up. But we got that epic finals last year, and ultimately we're paying the price for that now because we didn't have Kevin Durant and we didn't have the Warriors to make things a little bit more interesting. And so here we are in this post-Kawhi Leonard, post-Golden State Warriors, and post-process era where we thought all three of those would have a chance of becoming super teams. At least two of the three would become super teams, whether it was the process, whether it was the Warriors, or whether it was whatever Kawhi Leonard built with the Raptors or whatever the Raptors had going for them with a big three, or whatever they were going to become with the Clippers. We just anticipated something like that was to come. And now here we are in a superstarless void that was only perpetuated by the Warriors, the Bucks, and the Clippers not making it to the Final Four. So instead, you had some top eight teams finish in the Final Four. You had the Nuggets, and you had the Heat and you had the Celtics. You could make the argument them and the Raptors for being the fourth best team, and I guess the Raptors lost to the Celtics. I guess the Raptors kind of took that, or the Celtics kind of took that fourth place mantle. But still, you're watching this unfold, and now you have the Lakers about to be crowned champions, essentially by default, because it was the Lakers to lose. They were playing second-round teams, and the Lakers are going to win. And for much of NBA history, and in fact all of NBA history, barring a few examples here, teams have had to, quote-unquote, pay their dues before becoming champions. Everyone has to go through a little bit of suffering before they can become champions. For the Miami Heat, this is going to be their suffering, and I don't suspect that they will get back to the finals next year by virtue of the Celtics are still pretty good and Brooklyn's the ultimate wild card, and I think Toronto's not sustainable, so they'll fall to the 5 seed, but I could be wrong. And the Bucks are obviously still there. I could see the Bucks having some difficulty with, obviously, the end of Giannis being the eminent domain that dictates the Milwaukee Bucks over the next, whatever it is, 11 months, 12 months, whenever we have free agency again. We just don't know when we're going to have free agency again. And so here we are with Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, Toronto, the East again, still devoid of superstars apart from Kevin Durant, but Kevin Durant is the ultimate wild card, which Kevin Durant we get back is a question mark. Here is the East devoid of stars and not a lot of big change coming. But this is Miami dues that are being paid. Miami had this run that was very strange, and they benefited from the Giannis injury, even though they did beat up good on the Bucks to start that series. Miami gets a benefit from that. And then Miami got a winnable matchup with Boston. And now here they are, obviously with injuries included, being a little bit exposed. But again, pay your dues. The Nuggets are paying their dues at this point in time. I don't know if they'll ever get to the point where they can become champions because we'll get to this in a moment. Actually, let's just go right there now. The NBA landscape is changing. So for much of NBA history, you have had to pay their dues. What has happened with LeBron James is that he has been doing this for so long, where he has not only made every single finals for the last decade, apart from the one year he wasn't healthy, made every finals for a decade, but he's done it with three different teams. And he did it before with a fourth Cleveland team, but then obviously there were seasons in between and a little bit fluky, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, he's been doing it with three different teams. There are no dues that have – LeBron James had to pay his dues, but the Miami Heat had to pay their dues by virtue of losing in the finals. The Cleveland Cavaliers technically had to pay their dues, but, you know, the Warriors still existed. So, you know, I've talked about before, like, this is LeBron's reward for having to put up with the crap that was the Warriors for the last decade. And so LeBron doesn't pay his dues, or at least LeBron teams doesn't pay his dues, because this is the evolution of the sport. In a post-decision NBA, LeBron James is going to – LeBron James has changed that landscape. And tomorrow, LeBron James is going to assert himself again at the top of the mountain with Anthony Davis by his side and with J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters and JaVale McGee, because it's amazing that we can now say – three-time NBA champion JaVale McGee, they're going to assert themselves again the way he did with the Cavs, the way he did with the Heat, even if they did have to pay their dues ever so slightly. LeBron has been doing this so long that we just don't notice anymore when LeBron has this type of moment where he builds the team and that team immediately is more talented than everyone else. Except in the case of the Cavs, where he just happened to build a team in the midst of the rise of the Golden State Warriors. A transition time in the sport, boom, here comes this Warriors team that changes the way everyone thinks about the game and becomes the most dominating dynasty since Shaq and Kobe. And before Shaq and Kobe, I'm not sure one of those even existed. You can chalk up the two Michael Jordan ones and blend them together, but I think like the run of dominance we're talking about with what Shaq and Kobe were, for like a four-year stretch where nobody had any shot at catching them. 4 or 5 years. There was the 1 year that they fell apart because of injuries, but about 5 years. A dominating stretch where everyone eventually is just rooting for them to lose. The Warriors were that. LeBron had to put up with that. He played the Warriors for straight years in the finals. Probably should have lost all four if not for a Draymond Green suspension in game five of the 2016 finals. So this is his reward, but he doesn't have to pay his dues. LeBron James has paid his dues over decades, and he's assembled rosters that he can win with. Void of no Warriors, no Kawhi Leonard, and no process. All three of those supposed to be super teams fell apart. So without any of those things, here is LeBron James and not Giannis, because again, Giannis fell apart, but it could have been Giannis. It very easily could have been Giannis instead of LeBron at this stage of the game, because do I believe that had the Clippers defeated the Denver Nuggets like they were supposed to and like they were doing, that the Clippers would have defeated the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals? Yes. Emphatic yes. I believe the Clippers would have won that series against the Lakers. And I was pissed that I spent not only a full year talking about it, but then added on because we had a damn pandemic and we just never got to watch that Clippers-Lakers. We just never got it. We can keep talking about it forever and ever and ever. And so here we are now. LeBron is going to get it, not Giannis. Giannis is far from a super team, but Giannis is a player good enough where had it been him instead of LeBron, where LeBron loses in the second round or LeBron loses in the conference finals, Giannis is the one making that ascent to the championship that LeBron is doing it right now, because it's a weird time in the NBA. This is once in a 20-year window where there are no super teams in the sport, because ultimately people ask for no super teams. The sport is being pushed in a direction of let's break up these super teams, and now you have the lowest rated finals in a decade because of the poor matchups, not because of the great play of basketball, not because of anything that pushes forward other people's agendas. It is poor basketball matchups. Matchups are everything for the NBA. It's why they were so intent on Clippers-Lakers and why it was a catastrophe when the Clippers lost to the Lakers. But at least in silver lining, you knew you were going to have the Lakers, you knew you were going to have LeBron, and you could sack the holy shit out of that Kobe Bryant and LeBron James and holding up that trophy that you're going to get tomorrow night with like half of it, the NBA watching it, maybe a little bit more because it's a closeout game. It's interesting to watch, and history is going to reflect very well upon LeBron James. But when you talk about, when we do this legacy talk and when we do these Hall of Fame speeches, et cetera, there will only just be a brief mention of, oh yeah, he went to Los Angeles and won a championship. It's going to be even less if LeBron ends up winning again next year, which I think the Lakers have to be the prohibitive favorite at this point, considering that the Clippers have very minimal options for improvement or outlets for improvement, and the Eastern Conference is still just a total cluster bleep at this point. So here we are, and LeBron is going to be rewarded with this championship, and that's good. He has earned it. Earned it because he put up with the crap with the Spurs and he put up with the crap with the Warriors. And so here he is now. This is only the second time in LeBron's career, second time ever, that Miami has been favored headed, I'm sorry, that a LeBron team has been favored headed into a finals. 10 finals appearances. This is the second time he's been favored. That first time was 2011 when they lost to the Mavericks. So all three of those titles, a LeBron team was initially the underdog. And the fact that he's done it 9 years in a row is obviously remarkable. I'm dominating the Eastern Conference and yada, yada, yada. Super team post-decision world, you're going to have the Kevin Durant joining Brooklyn and figuring things out and Kyrie Irving and all that fun stuff where they're now the anti-LeBron and everyone's rooting for a Brooklyn and New York, a Brooklyn versus Los Angeles championship next year. I get it. And so here you are now with LeBron James, and NBA history being rewritten in terms of paying your dues and winning a championship. But LeBron has done that for a while. This isn't the first time a LeBron James team has rewritten the narrative on quote-unquote paying your dues and the struggle to become a champion. What happened this year was just everybody was in a vulnerable position because of not just a pandemic, but because the Clippers and the Bucks lost early in the playoffs. And so teams have had to pay their dues. Everyone has had to pay their dues before they become champions. Go back to any team you can find in NBA history, and they did not win immediately, like their first trip to the playoffs, et cetera, et cetera, until you get to this later team, which is rewriting everything because it's a once-in-a-20-year opportunity where there are no super teams in the NBA because of this perfect storm of Kawhi Leonard entering his prime and his team getting knocked out early. Curry and the Warriors falling apart a couple of years earlier than they should have, as well as the process falling apart. All of those things go together in unison to create this perfect concoction of a championship for LeBron James that nobody is going to watch. Probably not even me. As someone who grew up a Lakers fan but realizes now that his allegiances have gone away from the Lakers, you'd be hard-pressed watching this game tonight. You'd just be pretty hard-pressed to find that one happening. And so here we are, and here we go. This is LeBron James about to be crowned a champion. The Lakers about to be crowned champions, and for the next couple months and the next few months until we finally have another NBA season, we are just going to watch and wander to see where all of this goes, because I think this will probably be the last time I discuss the NBA for a while, at least until after the Super Bowl, save for the NBA draft and any trade that becomes available, because we love the transaction. It just doesn't look like there's going to be very many transactions here during this 2020 offseason. I might be wrong. Maybe there's a Bradley Beal trade. I don't think Giannis becomes available, but I could be wrong. You know, someone could surprise me and have a trade offer come out on the table. We'll see. But for now, you can still look at it and see everyone is going to be available. I'm sorry, everyone's going to return to the teams that they were on before, and you'll see some tinkering around the edges, and Anthony Davis will get a contract, but it'll probably be like a one-and-one thing, so it won't be too impressive, and everyone is going to go their separate ways on this one, and everyone's going to be happy. So congratulations to the Lakers. They are going to become champions, but Lakers fans still behave like losers, and it's very strange to watch. The Braves are up 7-0 on the Marlins in the sixth. They are still piling on. Jesus, they are still piling on. Athletics only got 3 after that home run, so it remains 3-0. This is fun. And Greinke might be out of the game. He's battling injury, et cetera, et cetera. We'll see how all of that goes. Let's talk about Dwayne Haskins, because Dwayne Haskins is on the bench. And Dwayne Haskins going to the bench is an interesting situation because he hasn't played all that bad this year. But there's a great report, and I was just reading it. I forgot who was – I think it was the Washington Post was putting it out. But basically, the Washington football team and Ron Rivera were basically saying, hey – the reason we're benching him is because of his lack of preparation, which is something that was concerning last year. We saw it with Dwayne Haskins, where it was a lot of like bonehead decisions and like weird choices, et cetera, et cetera. Decision making was not always there. It was a sign that I said, like, he's a work in progress, and if you give Ron Rivera time, then it'll work out. But the more likely scenario is that Ron Rivera picks his own quarterback. And that's probably not going to be Dwayne Haskins. Well, now here we are. Dwayne Haskins is done for his time with the Washington racial slurs. If they can trade him at the deadline, if someone's willing to pay a premium for Dwayne Haskins, maybe that goes the right way. Say someone is desperate in need of a quarterback contingency plan. Surprisingly, surprisingly, you're going to the Washington racial slurs if you need a quarterback contingency. It's strange, considering that they probably have one of the worst quarterback situations in the league. I digress, however, because Haskins is done. No question about it. The fact that he's going to the third string tells you all you need to know. The fact that it's week four tells you all you need to know. You won't be hearing from Dwayne Haskins again in a Washington uniform. That I can be certain about. It'll be Kyle Allen. We're also one hit away from an Alex Smith performance, and that one just still baffles me a little bit when I hear that Alex Smith is about to be back in an NFL uniform. But we're going to let that happen, so let's just move on here. And so Haskins is in this interesting position where he's going to the bench, and it's because of his decision-making. But ultimately what it comes down to is Ron Rivera never wanted Dwayne Haskins and never believed in Dwayne Haskins. Now, did Dwayne Haskins beat out Kyle Allen for the starting job, despite the fact that Ron Rivera obviously wanted to start Kyle Allen at quarterback? Yes, he did. Does it say very much about Dwayne Haskins that he beat out Kyle Allen as quarterback? Not really. I know Kyle Allen has a 6-7 career record, which, again, if you didn't know that, Kyle Allen has a 6-7 career record. And I know that's strange, but what we are watching is basically Washington is going down the tank. They are going to give Kyle Allen whatever reps he needs, not the future of the team. Maybe this is the year Rivera fixes the quarterback. I could see it being a year later for Washington still. I know they might not have a higher draft pick than this year, but I could see them still waiting even another year before they go and fix the quarterback. And so here we are where Haskins is going to go to the bench, and Washington is not going to be any good. Like, Washington, I know they're like a game behind the Eagles right now. Look, Washington, time for them to fall apart, time for them to just go away. I know Kyle Allen will win you a couple games, and that's honestly all they can ask for at this point is like 3-13, 4-12. Get one of those top picks. If they want to pick a quarterback, they can have their pick of any of these quarterbacks. It might not be Trevor Lawrence. It might be Trevor Lawrence. The Jets and Giants might win. Last year, Washington lost to the Giants the last week of the season to get Chase Young. So it's obviously doable. But the bottom line is this is all about Dwayne Haskins. This is not about a love for Kyle Allen, even though Ron Rivera does have an infatuation with Kyle Allen. This is not about Kyle Allen's development. This is not about Dwayne Haskins' performance in any way. What this ultimately comes down to is Ron Rivera being done, D-O-N-E, done with Dwayne Haskins before it really even started. I don't think he had really any intentions to keep him around long-term, but this is certainly the sign that this is the decline for Dwayne Haskins inevitably all the way as far as you can go, which is DNP coach's decision for the next however many weeks. Daniel Jones will be joining you soon. So Giants fans, if you think he lucked out on that one, trust me, both you and the racial slurs are just awful organizations in general. You guys didn't luck out on that one either. So we'll see Daniel Jones joining him sooner rather than later. So let us go from Dwayne Haskins to Lamar Jackson, a sign of generally better play from the quarterback position in pretty much every sense of the word. Through four games this year, Lamar Jackson has completed 68% of his pass attempts for 769 yards, 7 touchdowns to just 1 interception. For the season, Lamar has a 113.1 quarterback rating, and he's added 236 of his trademark rushing yards to go along with those numbers. By all statistics, Lamar Jackson is a very, very good quarterback, a surefire Pro Bowler who has improved his accuracy from his 65% clip back in 2019. I suspect, and we're already starting to see this, everyone will write off Lamar Jackson for the next month or so. As great as his numbers look, they aren't MVP level. And that's unfortunately what we've come to expect from Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson does not play another primetime football game until week 10. And the one he left a lasting memory with for everyone, encompassed everyone, is that game between the Chiefs and the Ravens. Certainly the matchup of the year in the NFL. And people were disappointed because Lamar Jackson did not play well. And because Lamar Jackson did not play well, the game was a rout from the beginning. And the Chiefs dominated the Baltimore Ravens because Lamar Jackson did not play good in that game. And the game was hyped up to an unhealthy level, and Patrick Mahomes went nuts, and people immediately saw this gap between what they now feel like they were fooled to believe about Lamar Jackson, when really, did you really think Lamar Jackson was better than Patrick Mahomes? Like, take all the statistics aside from last year. You can include that in. Encompass everything there. Did you think he's better than Patrick Mahomes? Did you think he's better than Russell Wilson? Certainly no. I would argue he's not even better than Deshaun Watson, even though he's been better than Deshaun Watson this season. I would just say if you're asking which quarterback I would want, I would make sure I get the right coach if I'm taking Lamar Jackson. And so because the Ravens don't play a primetime football game until the middle of November, when they play the New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football, because of this, Baltimore and specifically Lamar Jackson are going to be largely ignored in the month of October, even slandered depending on how games go between them and the Pittsburgh Steelers and them and the Indianapolis Colts. They play both of those teams in between their primetime games. And when I say primetime games, I'm including the 1:25 CBS game with Jim Nance and Tony Romo. And I'm including Monday Night Football, and I'm including Thursday Night Football, and I'm including, of course, Sunday Night Football. So as unfair as this seems that Lamar Jackson is going to be largely ignored, national NFL fans expect more from Lamar Jackson if we're going to pay attention, which is really weird. Because of the expectation Lamar Jackson has set, NFL fans expect Lamar Jackson to win every game that he plays in. It's the standard that he set last season when he literally won every single game that he played in en route to the league's first unanimous MVP, and it took 4 weeks. So when I say he won literally every game, they went 12-0 to finish the season. It just took 4 weeks for them to tune up their offense and get it humming at the start of the season. So combine all of that with Lamar Jackson's 7-1 record in 2018 when he overtook the starting job from Joe Flacco and led the Ravens to the playoffs. And now over two full calendar years and three NFL seasons, we've come to expect Lamar Jackson to win every time he steps on a football field. The only times we've seen Lamar Jackson lose have come in what we've now deemed as big games, which are essentially just games that Lamar Jackson has lost. Lamar Jackson losing big games just is because big games, those are in air quotes, big games are just games that Lamar Jackson ends up losing. And so two playoff games, the Chargers game and the Titans game, as well as two matchups against the Chiefs, have been the only stains on Lamar Jackson's resume, unless you want to throw in a loss to the Browns, which everyone loses a game to a 500 team now and then. And the sports fan can take that and easily train their mind to weed out the good the same way that they do with Clayton Kershaw, with James Harden, and every American president that they don't agree with. And that includes whichever side of the argument you're on. You can be whichever political party, whichever side of the coin you fall on, it includes you. And obviously, these expectations for Lamar Jackson can't be attained. It's simply impossible for a player to win every single game that he played. Obviously, that is impossible, and Lamar Jackson's reputation must now work to the impossible standards that have been put before him. And a big part of this has to do with the plague affecting black people in any industry, and specifically black stars in any industry. In America, you often have to work twice as hard when you're in black America, entering whatever workforce it is. You often have to work twice as hard to get half as much. And I encourage you to listen to the ways white people talk about Lamar Jackson during these 2 weeks upcoming, depending on how those games go against the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Colts. Listen to how people are talking about Lamar Jackson over the last 2 weeks and the 2 weeks to come, and how people talked about Lamar Jackson before his NFL draft stock. When he wasn't a black star, he was just another black man coming into a predominantly black sport. Listen to the way white people talked about Lamar Jackson if you'd like more evidence of what I'm talking about. Specifically when it comes to words like traditional QB and running back jokes that we all made for a while. But regardless, these are important things to focus on. And I assume most people listening won't go out and find extra tape of Lamar Jackson. And I didn't do the research for you in advance, despite having all these stats on Lamar Jackson. And the fact that Lamar Jackson, I think, has something like a 24-5 record as a starter. It's something crazy like that. Unfortunately, I did not bring you those clips and those examples. But everyone is going to write off Lamar Jackson. That's the conclusion I'm trying to make. Everyone is going to write off Lamar Jackson for these next few weeks. And then he'll dazzle us again in November and December, and people will be reminded just how good Jackson is. And even if there isn't a Pro Bowl, he'll be named to the Pro Bowl team. And he'll probably not win MVP in 2020. Narratives usually don't allow that to happen because a lot of these awards are narrative-based. And so narrative probably won't go in the benefit of Lamar Jackson. Especially because we've already seen him lose to the Chiefs. His numbers are good, not great. He put up the exact same numbers as Ryan Tannehill if you extended them out through a 16-game season. Going back to when Tannehill took over for the Titans last year, that's what Lamar Jackson's numbers looked like, and obviously Tannehill was a surefire bet to make the Pro Bowl. And so Tannehill, I believe, was 28-7 touchdowns to INT. They won 11 QBR. Lamar through four games, 7 touchdowns, 1 INT, and a 113 QBR. So he's basically been 2019 Ryan Tannehill through the start of the season, just with more rushing yards. And so that's probably not going to get it. Well, they won't get an MVP. And they obviously don't have a perfect 12-0 finish in store for this season. And it'll be important as we keep watching to see just how much Lamar Jackson improves his accuracy year over year. That's the big difference for Lamar Jackson, that year over year accuracy improvement, because the Titans were able to exploit that part of his game. Is that what happened last year in the playoffs is that once the Titans got a lead, they dared him to beat him with his arm. And Lamar Jackson throwing 60 times a game is a terrible idea. Just like it's a terrible idea for Matt Ryan to throw 60 times a game, for Dak Prescott to throw 60 times a game, for Jared Goff to throw 60 times a game, for Jameis Winston to throw 60 times a game, for Baker Mayfield to throw 60 times a game, and it's a bad idea for even Patrick Mahomes to throw 50 times a game. It's a bad idea for Drew Brees to throw 50 to 60 times a game. It's not a winning formula. It's a lot of scrambling at that point, not scrambling the physical running, but just scrambling to generate points and generate offense. You don't want anyone throwing the ball 60 times a game. That plays into anyone's strengths, but you especially don't want an inaccurate quarterback throwing 60 times a game like Lamar Jackson did versus the Titans last season. And what I am looking for in these next games, where they play the Bengals and they play the Eagles and they play the Steelers and they play the Colts, I want to see what Lamar Jackson's accuracy looks like over a larger sample size. Because the first thing I mentioned when we started talking about Lamar Jackson is his 68% completion percentage, up from 65% last year. what looks small in the macro is actually a big time improvement, because if you took those numbers over a full season for a guy who averages 35 pass attempts a game, you're talking 500 pass attempts on a season. If you improve 3 percentage points on the accuracy, you are completing 15 passes more than you had the previous season. If you average 13 yards per completion, which I believe is the NFL average, so I would assume Lamar Jackson has a little bit more than that. But let's say 13. You're averaging 13 yards per completion times 15 extra completions. You are looking at just under 200 yards more passing. It's 195 extra yards of passing. 195 extra yards of passing is potentially 3 extra scoring drives. And 3 extra scoring drives could potentially swing 3-1 possession games. So best case scenario, just a 3-point swing in percentage points of completion percentage adds 3 touchdowns and 3 extra wins to your record. Best case scenario. You get 3 extra wins from 3 percentage points of improvement, like Lamar Jackson is, under the best case of circumstances. And so here is Lamar Jackson improving his accuracy, which was the biggest flaw of his passing game. And this is what I will be watching out for, because I'm not going to underrate Lamar Jackson. As much as I'm a Mahomes guy, I do like Patrick Mahomes a lot. He makes football really, really fun. And everyone's going to keep gushing over Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Josh Allen over the next month, as they rightfully should. Those guys are really good, and with the exception of Josh Allen, they are better quarterbacks than Lamar Jackson. This month, though, is going to be remarkably Lamar Jackson-less, but as we watch that play out, I will be focused on that completion percentage for Lamar Jackson. And against defenses like the Colts and the Steelers, who are ranked number 1 in the league, the Colts, and number 3 in the league, the Steelers. And it's going to be very, very fascinating, because Lamar Jackson is going to be doing it in the shadows, not the MVP of the league. The Ravens aren't going to go on a long win streak, and it's about how this second-tier quarterback, in the likes of Wentz and Matt Ryan, Dak Prescott, and Cam Newton, and all of these guys, you're going to see all of that play out under this new ideology. And as a result, Lamar Jackson is going to be welcomed back into that world of second tier quarterback, not crazy good MVP type player. Time will just tell with that, and we'll keep watching it go for however long it's going to progress, which hopefully will be a long time. We shall see as all of this continues to progress. So right now we've got the fourth inning of this Oakland versus Houston game. As things continue the path that they had originally thought it would be, Oakland staying alive. I did think, though, after Houston won that game yesterday, that we would be right back in a position where I think we're still good here. We may have lost our boy Martez real quick here, so I hope that we are still on the line. But what I was talking about there is I think we're still good to go. It doesn't say that the episode has paused, so I think we're still good in terms of, like, everything going on. I digress here, where we are – ooh, I hope Martez comes back, and I hope that you guys can still hear me. But anyways, I was talking about Oakland and Houston real quick here. I think that after that win yesterday, I had a good feeling that something like this was going to go on for Oakland at this point in time, where they would come back and take down Houston. I'm interested to see how it plays out, but it's going to be probably headed towards a game 5 unless we have a comeback here. I know there's a lot of time left in this game, and the only scoring in the game has been that Ramon Laureano 3-run homer, and there hasn't been any other scoring since then. Somehow with 2 playoff games on at the exact same time as this radio show, we are somehow still, with all of that going on, still right in the thick of things in terms of baseball playoffs. We still have not scored any runs on the radio show apart from what we had before, but the Braves are about to advance to the NLCS, which is the natural progression for the Atlanta Braves, and it's going to be interesting to see how all of that plays out over the next couple of weeks. Well, I guess next week we'll be back and there'll be NLCS on, so we know the Braves are advancing at this point, so that's going to be interesting as we keep on going. And I'm interested to just watch how all of that keeps playing out. And so the Braves are going to advance. The Astros are going to advance here. And whoop-de-doo, that is where baseball kind of stands right now. I see another caller here. Is this Martez? I'm hoping it's Martez here. No, maybe not here. Anyways, just trying to figure all that out at the same time. We got a lot of different stuff going on here. It's a little bit of a sensory overload a little bit, but we are doing pretty good here. So I was talking about Astro Ball a little bit earlier and how Lunau's great success has kind of been about the risk-taking of his endeavors as general manager of the Houston Astros. Obviously no longer the general manager of the Houston Astros following his firing as a result of the sign-stealing scandal. And so what we are watching here is a Houston Astros team that is probably going to advance. And the way they are advancing now to a fourth straight ALCS has been based on this idea of risk-taking, how risk-taking has become kind of important as we keep making decisions in sports. And a lot of the ideology for your favorite team has been about risk aversion. A lot of what they bank on is risk aversion. And so what we have now in sports is a whole lot of risk aversion and trying to keep your job and trying to hold on to everything going on here. And so now, hey, Martez, are you back now?
Yes, I'm back. Yes.
Okay, cool. I assumed it was still going, so I just kept working through it. But good to have you back here at the least now.
I appreciate you. I had to call in through the other phone on the other phone number, so that was me that called in because I got booted out from Detroit. So, but I'm
all
back.
Right.
I'm back.
It's all good as long as the episode kept rolling, though.
Yep, it is. It is.
All right. Cool. Cool. So, talking about risk aversion and the idea of risk aversion in sports and. This has been a difficult position for a while where everything is becoming very much concrete, break it up in sports basically. And I was trying to map out how we get to where we are in baseball, where it's a copycat league, all sports leagues are copycat leagues, and we're following what it is we do. We see a lot of it as just a human tendency that we like to follow things that work. This goes back to what I've talked about before about the law of diffusion of innovation. So basically, you can write it out on a piece of paper or whatever you have with you, or just envision a bell curve, basically. And what you have is different categories of where people fall on that spectrum. On the farthest to the left side of the bell curve, about 2.5% of our population is our innovators. People coming up with new ideas, having an idea to process and then going for it. These make the best leaders. And usually in sports, roughly, you get people in positions of power who are followers. But the real leaders and the real innovators pursue that. Then you have early adopters, about 12.5% of the population. And about those many people are your early adopters. They see things that are innovative and are willing to jump on board for everyone else. Then you get to the early majority, the majority, and the late majority. The late majority is the people who still use flip phones. The late majority is just kind of your general population, and the early majority is young people who, as they grow older, will grow into the late majority and the regular majority. And so as time progresses there, You're going to see something innovative, something interesting, and something new pop up. It happens all the time. You're going to see new innovative ideas come up all the time. And so Astro Ball is one of those new innovative tactics of how you win. The Cubs won a championship a year earlier. The Astros, in a more cold-hearted methodology of growth, they won a championship in 2017, and they've been to four straight league championship series, at least right now three on the precipice of four, if they can come back in this one. And so law of diffusion of innovation basically comes down to that practice point and that talking point, is that when you have new ideas, they become adopted. And risk aversion, there's a lot of risk involved in being someone who is an innovator. Obviously, because you don't know if the success works. Now, the ironic part is that people who are risk averse think they're chasing a safer option, but ultimately the safer option will only net you a certain amount of results, because everyone, by the time this innovation has worked out, everyone knows how to counterpoint that, and everyone's trying to do the same thing. And then, are you really doing anything different than your peers? Because if you're not improving relative to your peers, are you really improving when it comes to an industry like sports, where you can find definitive results and definitive whatever it may be? Even if sometimes there are flukes, like the GM of the Phillies and the GM of the Angels, who aren't bad GMs, they just didn't have the results. And as a result of that, the next choice was for them to move, to get fired. And so for the most part, when you're in a results-based industry and there is a finite amount of games, you are playing a finite game on the field, but baseball in and of itself is an infinite game. There is no way to win at baseball. Not baseball the game, baseball the industry. How do you win at the industry? Well, say you've won a championship or two. Well, is that it? Is the game over at that point? No, of course not. Baseball as an industry, Major League Baseball, if you want to call it, will continue long after you're gone, and it will continue well past any singular player or singular manager or singular executive or singular owner, for that matter. Major League Baseball will continue regardless. So that is what I'm talking about when I say the infinite game. It is an infinite game where the ultimate goal is to advance. And for some people, they view that as when they get fired, they are no longer advancing. But what they don't realize is that being fired is not the end of the game. It is just the end for them. They've dropped out of the game, not by choice, but they've obviously dropped out of the infinite game. They have the resources to do so, but they no longer have the will of their ownership. Or you can put it as they have the will to keep going, but don't have the resources, i.e. a Major League Baseball team willing to spend millions of dollars that you could run to put players on the field. So what does this have to do with law of diffusion of innovation? Well, in baseball specifically, in a sport that is so driven by the analytics and it's becoming increasingly singular-minded. I read this great article about the future brain drain in baseball, where highly skilled people will begin to leave baseball over the lack of good pay and upward mobility and all of the reasons anyone would want a more desirable job other than working in a sports franchise. So obviously, baseball is entertainment and emotional. Therefore, there will be a surplus of people willing to join baseball over however long the period of time is. And so the impact of this on the diversity of the sport is going to go very, very far down. You're going to see a lot of similarly minded people working within baseball, specifically white, straight men working in positions of power in baseball. And the good thing about brain drain is that you're going to get a lot of young people, but you're also going to get a lot of young, straight, white men working in baseball. But young is certainly better than old, because I love innovation and I love young people. I am a young person. I generally love young people getting positions of power, especially people that think closer to me, a 19-year-old, than a 74-year-old and a 77-year-old battling it out on a debate stage to decide who becomes the leader of the quote-unquote free world. So brain drain works both of those ways, that you're going to see that happen in baseball, which will minimize the innovation of the future. And this is no surprise. Saying that baseball is having less innovation than ever is not a surprising thing. Baseball is a traditionalist sport. It is inhabited predominantly by straight white men, and they hire a lot of straight white men. It is a traditional ideology, and traditionally, that's the ideology that dominates the scene. And so here we are now with Major League Baseball in that position of power, with Major League Baseball having this innovation with a guy like Luhnow, who is now being replicated across Major League Baseball by teams like the Orioles. They're doing the same thing. The Tigers are trying the same thing right now. If you look at Tampa Bay, I believe like 12 MLB organizations have either an executive from the Rays running their team or a manager from the Rays on their team, because the Rays are just smarter than everybody else in terms of how they run a franchise, well run right from the top on down with everyone on the same mindset. If you're looking for a model to run an organization, choose the Tampa Bay Rays. It's either the Rays model, it's the Astros model, or it's the Blue Jays now sans Braves model, where it was Alex Anthopoulos, I think his name is, going from the Toronto Blue Jays, building that team up, to now going to the Braves and building that team up over a three-year period of time. And so here is those are the models laid bare. And Theo Epstein is there, but no one's really replicating Theo's model because they already did that before. When they created the Astro Ball method was a lot of Theo Epstein principles with the Red Sox. And so here you are with basically three models everyone is following in baseball. The followers are following the leaders, and the leaders in this case are Astro Ball, they are the Tampa Bay Rays model, and they are the Atlanta Braves model. You're seeing the Braves model right now with teams like the Miami Marlins, who are playing the Braves right now, are certainly following that Braves model. Milwaukee is following that Braves model. To an extent, the Padres are following said Braves model and Alex Anthopoulos' model, but they've also got elements of the Astros in there, no doubt about it. Those models work to a T in terms of how do you improve over everyone else. And teams try to be as smart as the Rays, and they usually fail when they try to be as smart as the Rays. Whether it's Minnesota has actually figured it out very well in terms of Rocco Baldelli and what they're doing there. But whether you can go down the line to Toronto trying to turn things around there using a Rays model, or whether you want to go over to what the success the Dodgers have had, and now this, the Giants trying to replicate the Dodgers, which comes straight from the Tampa Bay tree, which is also now the Dodgers tree because it's Andrew Friedman and all that. Basically, where I'm going with this is that you're seeing who the smart innovators are. And as Astro Ball remains well and alive, at least to, at this point, we're starting to see everything play out in that mode of Astro Ball being the dominant power. They are still alive, at least for now. They are losing to the Astros. Oh, my God, they're up 5-3. Oh, my goodness. The Astros just had a 5-run fourth inning. They have the lead. Okay, Astro Ball might be going ahead right now. We started off. Wow. This is really the true testament of baseball. We started off with a 3-run homer by Ramon Laureano, and now we're going to close out the show with a 5-run fourth inning for the Houston Astros. I would love to know how that one happened, but I think the clock is going to run out on me before I can figure out what happened with the Astros. So I will give the pleasantries and maybe describe what happened. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here this week on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. You can also check us out. You can check us out there or check us out on the podcast feed over at Take It Easy Podcast, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Michael Brantley hit a 2-run home run, and Carlos Correa followed up with a 3-run homer. Okay, home runs, you can get a good idea that this is going to be the Astros kind of game. We'll see how it plays out, though. Again, download, rate, review, subscribe, wherever it is that you are listening to Take It Easy Podcast. It is greatly, greatly appreciated, as well as checking us out on Open Talk Radio and all the other great, great episodes and content available on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. This has been a fun episode. My name is Kyle. Be on the lookout for more stuff. Thank you, everybody, and have a great afternoon.